This is an NPR News special. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. In an address today at George Washington University, President Obama lays out his ideas to rein in federal spending and reduce the debt. This is just days after a deal to avoid a government shutdown. In the speech, the president says, "We have to live within our means, reduce our deficit, and get back on a path that will allow us to pay down our debt. And we have to do it in a way that protects the recovery and protects the investments we need to grow, create jobs, and win the future." The president's address then goes into a lengthy history of, well, how we got to where we are. The ideal of a government that, first of all, lets its people release their entrepreneurial abilities through low taxes and small government, but a government that also, and he quotes here Abraham Lincoln, the first Republican president, he makes a point of saying that, that has joint responsibilities for each other as well. And he talks about the balance of those responsibilities throughout our time and then goes through a more detailed history of the late 20th century, the deals reached by Presidents Reagan and Presidents Clinton to keep the government debt in balance, in control, and achieve the balance of keep the federal debt low. Then he points out that, of course, in the previous administration, there were two wars and then the Bush-era tax cuts that he said have not been paid for. The wars were not paid for era, and also the Medicare Part D, the drug spending program that was not paid for either. And then he says he found himself in a serious situation when he came to office.
And now that our economic recovery is gaining strength, Democrats and Republicans must come together and restore the fiscal responsibility that served us so well in the 1990s. We have to live within our means. We have to reduce our deficit, and we have to get back on a path that will allow us to pay down our debt. And we have to do it in a way that protects the recovery, protects the investments we need to grow, creates jobs, and helps us win the future. Now, before I get into how we can achieve this goal, some of you, particularly the younger people here, you don't qualify, Joe. Some of you might be wondering, why is this so important? Why does this matter to me? Well, here's why. Even after our economy recovers, our government will still be on track to spend more money than it takes in throughout this decade and beyond. That means we'll have to keep borrowing more from countries like China.
The remark about Joe, of course, a reference to Vice President Joe Biden among the dignitaries in the audience at George Washington University today. As the president continues his remarks, he says, "Ultimately, this rising debt will cost us jobs and damage our economy. It will prevent us from making the investments we need to win the future. We're not going to be able to afford good schools, new research, or repair to roads and bridges, all the things that will create new jobs and businesses here in the country." But then he says, "The good news is this does not have to be our future. This doesn't have to be the country we leave to our children." He argues we can solve this problem, but then he says we need to get honest about what's causing our deficit. And he says most Americans tend to dislike government spending. They tend to dislike, in the abstract, he says they also tend to dislike paying higher taxes.
By the end of this decade, the interest that we owe on our debt could rise to nearly $1 trillion. Think about that. That's the interest. Just the interest payments. Then, as the baby boomers start to retire in greater numbers and healthcare costs continue to rise, the situation will get even worse. By 2025, the amount of taxes we currently pay will only be enough to finance our healthcare programs, Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, and the interest we owe on our debt. That's it. Every other national priority, education, transportation, even our national security, will have to be paid for with borrowed money. Now, ultimately, all this rising debt will cost us jobs and damage our economy.
Because all this spending is popular, though, he says, with Republicans and Democrats alike, spending on a strong military and strong defense, education and medical research, because nobody wants to pay higher taxes, politicians, he says, are often eager to feed the impression that solving the problem is just a matter of eliminating waste and abuse, that tackling the deficit issue will not require tough choices. Or they suggest that we can somehow close our entire deficit by eliminating things like foreign aid, even though foreign aid makes up about 1% of our entire budget. The president, in a sense, has been referring the debate that has been going on here in Washington the past couple of weeks over the current budget, the 2011 budget, where much of the discussion, indeed all of the discussion, has been focused on about 12% of the federal budget, the 12% of the federal budget that involves so-called non-defense discretionary spending programs, well, like agriculture and programs like education and programs like Corporation for Public Broadcasting and Planned Parenthood and other things like that. It does not involve the Pentagon, non-defense. It does not involve Medicare and Medicaid. It does not involve Social Security. Those first three, really, have been identified as the drivers of the spending and the debt. As Willie Sutton, the bank robber, once famously said, asked when why he robs banks, that's where the money is. And, well, congressional appropriators and congressional budget cutters have looked at those big entitlement programs, Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, and to some degree at defense spending as well, and said, well, if we're going to be reducing our budgets, that's where the money is. So president argues that there has to be a balanced approach. He is highly critical of the approach favored by Republican budget, the chairman of the House Budget Committee, Republican Paul Ryan of Wisconsin. He says he takes a serious approach at reducing the deficit with proposals to reduce about $5 trillion over the next 10 years. But he said this lays out a vision of America that is not going to be one we may want to look at. It looks at a vision of America where we're not going to be able to fix the roads when they crumble or to provide enough money for health care for seniors or provide enough money for the many millions of Americans who are currently without health care coverage. So the president says there has to be an alternative, but we must, he says, continue to focus on the kinds of programs and the areas of the budget that we have to focus on. And indeed, the other part of the program, and he calls his balanced approach, is the idea that there has to be revenue increases in all of this as well. Revenue increases that are going to involve elimination of the Bush-era tax cuts for the wealthiest Americans, those who earn over $250,000 a year. If that debate sounds familiar, you remember last December, this was an important part of the debate as Republicans and Democrats reached an agreement at that time to extend those tax cuts in the House of Representatives and the Senate and then get some programs that the president wanted as well. But he says it's important that you look at the part of the budget where the money is.
So here's the truth. Around two-thirds of our budget, two-thirds, is spent on Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, and national security. Two-thirds. Programs like unemployment insurance, student loans, veterans benefits, and tax credits for working families take up another 20%. What's left after interest on the debt is just 12% for everything else. That's 12% for all of our national priorities: education, clean energy, medical research, transportation, our national parks, food safety, keeping our air and water clean, you name it. All of that accounts for 12% of our budget. Now, up till now, the debate here in Washington, the cuts proposed by a lot of folks in Washington, have focused exclusively on that 12%. But cuts to that 12% alone won't solve the problem. So any serious plan to tackle our deficit will require us to put everything on the table and take on excess spending wherever it exists in the budget. A serious plan doesn't require us to balance our budget overnight. In fact, economists think that with the economy just starting to grow again, we need a phased-in approach. But it does require tough decisions and support from our leaders in both parties now. Above all, it will require us to choose a vision of the America we want to see 5 years, 10 years, 20 years down the road.
President Obama speaking at George Washington University today as he lays out his ideas to rein in federal spending and get control of the federal deficit. I'm Neil Conan. This is special coverage from NPR News, and Mara Liasson, NPR's national political correspondent, who's with me here in the studio. And Mara, when the president says he's laying out his vision, this is in sharp contrast to the vision that was laid out a couple of weeks ago by the Republican chairman of the House Budget Committee, Paul Ryan, who laid out $5 trillion in cuts, but said then, and Republicans said again today, tax increases are not going to be part of the solution.
That's right. The president has a very different vision. What we have now is a real debate about the fiscal future of the United States. The president has stayed out of this debate in a forthright way until today, and now he's jumped in. He spends a lot of this speech eviscerating the Ryan budget, trying to explain why their vision of America doesn't comport with American values and why he has a better idea how we can achieve the same goals as Paul Ryan without privatizing Medicare or shortchanging our investments in the future, the kinds of things he thinks will make the economy grow and boost the middle class. What he does in this speech is he does embrace, to large extent, the recommendations of his own deficit commission, which came out late last year, and he hasn't embraced them until now, but he does. And he laid out quite a specific framework where he wants to get $4 trillion in savings over 12 years. He would have automatic fail-safe triggers that if Congress couldn't reach that, get the deficit to a certain percentage of GDP, there would be automatic cuts in tax expenditures and spending.
Mara Liasson with us. We're going to bring you more analysis of the president's program, how it compares with the Ryan plan, and get some political reaction here in Washington, D.C. from, well, those who are going to be trying to put these proposals, the Ryan proposals and the Obama proposals, into legislation and get them enacted, and how this may play out in the election of 2012, where it's likely to be one of the key issues of the campaign, not just for the presidency, but for Congress as well. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to special coverage from NPR News. This is an NPR News special. I'm Neil Conan in Washington, where President Obama today jumped into the debate over government spending and government deficits. Right now, he's winding up his address at George Washington University. Let's listen in.
So that the amount of taxes you pay isn't determined by what kind of accountant you can afford. I believe reform should protect the middle class, promote economic growth, and build on the Fiscal Commission's model of reducing tax expenditures so that there is enough savings to both lower rates and lower the deficit. And as I called for in the State of the Union, we should reform our corporate tax code as well to make our businesses and our economy more competitive. So this is my approach to reduce the deficit by $4 trillion over the next 12 years. It's an approach that achieves about $2 trillion in spending cuts across the budget. It will lower our interest payments on the debt by $1 trillion. It calls for tax reform to cut about $1 trillion in tax expenditures, spending in the tax code. And it achieves these goals while protecting the middle class, protecting our commitment to seniors, and protecting our investments in the future. Now, in the coming years, if the recovery speeds up and our economy grows faster than our current projections, we can make even greater progress than I've pledged here. But just to hold Washington and to hold me accountable, and make sure that the debt burden continues to decline, my plan includes a debt fail-safe. If by 2014 our debt is not projected to fall as a share of the economy, if we haven't hit our targets, if Congress has failed to act, then my plan will require us to come together and make up the additional savings with more spending cuts and more spending reductions in the tax code. That should be an incentive for us to act boldly now instead of kicking our problems further down the road. So this is our vision for America. This is my vision for America. a vision where we live within our means while still investing in our future, where everyone makes sacrifices, but no one bears all the burden, where we provide a basic measure of security for our citizens, and we provide rising opportunity for our children. There will be those who vigorously disagree with my approach. I can guarantee that as well. Some will argue we should not even consider ever raising taxes, even if only on the wealthiest Americans. It's just an article of faith to them. I say that at a time when the tax burden on the wealthy is at its lowest level in half a century, the most fortunate among us can afford to pay a little more. I don't need another tax cut. Warren Buffett doesn't need another tax cut. Not if we have to pay for it by making seniors pay more for Medicare, or by cutting kids from Head Start, or by taking away college scholarships that I wouldn't be here without and that some of you would not be here without. And here's the thing. I believe that most wealthy Americans would agree with me. They want to give back to their country, a country that's done so much for them. It's just Washington hasn't asked them to. Others will say that we shouldn't even talk about cutting spending until the economy is fully recovered. These are mostly folks in my party. I'm sympathetic to this view, which is one of the reasons I supported the payroll tax cuts we passed in December. It's also why we have to use a scalpel and not a machete to reduce the deficit, so that we can keep making the investments that create jobs. But doing nothing on the deficit is just not an option. Our debt has grown so large that we could do real damage to the economy if we don't begin a process now to get our fiscal house in order. Finally, there are those who believe we shouldn't make any reforms to Medicare, Medicaid, or Social Security out of fear that any talk of change to these programs will immediately usher in the sort of steps that the House Republicans have proposed. And I understand those fears, but I guarantee that if we don't make any changes at all, we won't be able to keep our commitment to a retiring generation that will live longer and will face higher health care costs than those who came before. Indeed, to those in my own party, I say that if we truly believe in a progressive vision of our society, we have an obligation to prove that we can afford our commitments. If we believe the government can make a difference in people's lives, we have the obligation to prove that it works by making government smarter and leaner and more effective. Of course, there are those who simply say there's no way we can come together at all and agree on a solution to this challenge. They'll say the politics of this city are just too broken, the choices are just too hard, the parties are just too far apart. And after a few years on this job, I have some sympathy for this view. But I also know that we've come together before and met big challenges. Ronald Reagan and Tip O'Neill came together to save Social Security for future generations. The first President Bush and a Democratic Congress came together to reduce the deficit. President Clinton and a Republican Congress battled each other ferociously, disagreed on just about everything, but they still found a way to balance the budget. And in the last few months, both parties have come together to pass historic tax relief and spending cuts. And I know there are Republicans and Democrats in Congress who want to see a balanced approach to deficit reduction. And even those Republicans I disagree with most strongly, I believe, are sincere about wanting to do right by their country. We may disagree on our visions, but I truly believe they want to do the right thing. So I believe we can and must come together again. This morning, I met with Democratic and Republican leaders in Congress to discuss the approach that I laid out today. And in early May, the Vice President will begin regular meetings with leaders in both parties with the aim of reaching a final agreement on a plan to reduce the deficit and get it done by the end of June. I don't expect the details in any final agreement to look exactly like the approach I laid out today. This is a democracy. That's not how things work. I'm eager to hear other ideas from all ends of the political spectrum. And though I'm sure the criticism of what I've said here today will be fierce in some quarters, and my critique of the House Republican approach has been strong, Americans deserve and will demand that we all make an effort to bridge our differences and find common ground. This larger debate that we're having, this larger debate about the size and the role of government, it has been with us since our founding days. And during moments of great challenge and change, like the one that we're living through now, the debate gets sharper and it gets more vigorous. That's not a bad thing. In fact, it's a good thing. As a country that prizes both our individual freedom and our obligations to one another, this is one of the most important debates that we can have. But no matter what we argue, no matter where we stand, we've always held certain beliefs as Americans. We believe that in order to preserve our own freedoms and pursue our own happiness, we can't just think about ourselves. We have to think about the country that made these liberties possible. We have to think about our fellow citizens with whom we share a community. And we have to think about what's required to preserve the American dream for future generations. This sense of responsibility to each other and to our country, this isn't a partisan feeling. This isn't a Democratic or a Republican idea. It's patriotism. The other day I received a letter from a man in Florida. He started off by telling me he didn't vote for me, and he hasn't always agreed with me. But even though he's worried about our economy and the state of our politics, here's what he said. He said, "I still believe. I believe in that great country that my grandfather told me about. I believe that somewhere, lost in this quagmire of petty bickering on every news station, the American dream is still alive. We need to use our dollars here, rebuilding, refurbishing, and restoring all that our ancestors struggled to create and maintain. We as a people must do this together. No matter the color of the state one comes from or the side of the aisle one might sit on. I still believe. I still believe as well. And I know that if we can come together and uphold our responsibilities to one another and to this larger enterprise that is America, we will keep the dream of our founding alive in our time. And we will pass it on to our children. We will pass on to our children a country that we believe in." Thank you. God bless you, and may God bless the United States of America. Thank you.
President Obama wrapping up a speech at George Washington University on the deficit, the debt, and a proposal to reduce both of those as he looks 12 years ahead. You're listening to special coverage from NPR News. And I'm Neil Conan here in Washington. And with me in the studio are Mara Liasson, NPR national political correspondent, and John Itzde, NPR economics correspondent. And Mara Liasson, let's go first to the politics and the president putting himself, it seems to me, squarely in the center.
Squarely in the center. The White House strategy all along was to wait for Paul Ryan, the House Budget Committee chair, Republican, to go first to lay out his vision. They took a lot of hits. The president took a lot of hits on leadership. Why wasn't he stepping forward to solve these problems? He was basically playing rope-a-dope. But this was their strategy, and you can see it working. He was able to eviscerate Ryan, in his view, Ryan's plan and vision to explain why it was bad, and then he laid out his plan and why it's better. He said that he can accomplish the same goals as Paul Ryan without hurting Medicare, without giving huge tax cuts to millionaires and billionaires, and also while retaining enough money to invest in things like education and research and development. He did lay out his vision of progressive government, something the White House was telling us that he wouldn't do. He wouldn't give a Brookings Institution type speech is what I was told. But I actually think this was a Brookings Institution type speech. He said, "This is my vision for America, a vision where we live within our means while still investing in our future, where everyone makes sacrifices, but no one bears all the burden, where we provide a basic measure of security for our citizens and rising opportunity for our children." The White House believes the Ryan budget is imbalanced because it cuts too much out of programs for the poor and middle class without asking the rich or the defense, the Pentagon, to share.
Well, one of the hits he was taking, John Itzde, was that the president was ignoring his own commission, the so-called Simpson-Bowles Commission. And how much does this accord with their proposals, which, well, we're calling, it was a bipartisan commission that called for deep cuts?
Well, he does, I think, in terms of non-security spending, follow what the commission suggested. Not as much in defense spending. He does not cut as much from defense spending as they do. But he does call for $2 in cuts for every $1 in tax increases to try to close the deficit, and another dollar in interest savings would come to get this $4 trillion in deficit reduction that he's saying he's got or is his goal over the next 12 years.
And I know that you've just had a few minutes to look at it, but broadly, do the numbers seem to add up?
You know, it is hard because it's not clear exactly what baseline they're operating from. But one question I have is, the president in his original budget had $1 trillion in deficit reduction. He's now claiming another $4 trillion, and he says that's on top of the previous budget. So I think we need to look more closely to see whether that's the case. Of course, you know, there is not a detailed map for cutting here. We don't know what kind of money is going to come out of
devil
different programs.
Devil being in the details.
And this is a framework that he's laid out today. But a framework, I think, that he is happy to compare alongside Chairman Paul Ryan's budget, the Republican a proposal from the House of Representatives.
The president saying all along he welcomed this debate, and
yes,
now he's entered it, Mara.
And now he's entered it. And also, he does really embrace the Bowles-Simpson vision. He also gave a nod to the group of Republicans and Democrats in the Senate, the Gang of Six, who are trying to figure out a process to legislate the Deficit Commission's proposals into law. I think the most important thing is not so much whether his numbers add up, but the fact that they have proposed this fail-safe deficit trigger. In other words, he says by 2014, if the debt is not projected to fall as a share of the economy, or Congress has failed to act, there will be automatic spending cuts and spending reductions in the tax code.
Right.
And that, he says, should be an incentive for us to act boldly now instead of kicking our problems further down the row.
And
Congress has done this before with pay-as-you-go legislation, right. Graham Rudman. It has worked.
He, as we mentioned, in his view, eviscerated Paul Ryan's proposal. He also addressed his critics in his own party.
Yes, he certainly did. He said, to those of us who truly believe in my own party in a progressive vision of our society, we have the obligation to prove that we can afford our commitments. If we believe the government can make a difference in people's lives, we have the obligation to prove that it works by making government smarter, leaner, and more effective. I think he said a lot in here for Democrats. He's not going to let Medicare be a voucher program. He said, as long as I'm president, tax cuts for the wealthy are going to expire. I thought it was a rousing, progressive speech, also balanced, stepped up to the plate on this. And of course, the biggest difference is going to be on taxes. That's where the Republicans have drawn their red line. They don't want those tax cuts for the rich to expire at the end of 2012. He knows knows that's going to be a big battle. But now the battle is joined. And it's very interesting. Today, in a pre-buttal, the Speaker of the House said he had just come back from the White House. The president obviously is asking each leader to give four members for this negotiations that are going to start in May. But he says, I think the president is pretty serious about this as well. That's John Boehner.
NPR's Mara Liasson, also with us, John Itze, NPR's economics correspondent. Stay with us. We're going to get more analysis from Maya McGinnis, president of the Committee for a Responsible Budget. We're also going to get some political reaction from the chairman of the Congressional Black Caucus and from Representative Jason Chaffetz of Utah, representing the 3rd District there. Stay with us. This is NPR News. This is an NPR News special. I'm Neil Conan in Washington, where about 10 minutes ago, President Obama wrapped up his proposals to bring down the federal deficit over the course of the next 12 years, $4 trillion worth, he said. And he said it was going to be a balanced approach. Yes, there would be cuts, including cuts to entitlement programs like Medicaid and Medicare, but also there were going to be tax increases. We're going to be talking in just a moment to Maya McGinnis of the Committee for a Responsible Budget, but with us on the phone right now is Congressman Jason Chaffetz, a Republican from Utah who represents the 3rd District, and very good of you to be with us today.
Well, thanks for having me on. I don't want to bump Maya. She's one of the smartest minds in the country, so you better get to her.
We will, but we understand you have only a limited time, so I wanted to get your reaction to the president's proposals.
Well, I thought it was high on political rhetoric. It kind of sounded more like a leadership speech that, yeah, I'm going to lead out by appointing Joe Biden to do the work. It didn't have the substance that a Paul Ryan proposal has. I think that's why, from my personal perspective, like the president was panicking a little bit. I think his budget proposal did not go off well. There's a huge contrasted gulf with what the House Republicans had introduced, and consequently needed to get out there and try to scramble to say, hey, no, wait, we are going to lead out on this stuff. So it just lacks definition.
Yet, do we have a debate now? Do we have a clear set of proposals on one side and a clear set of proposals on another?
Well, you know, we look back at the president's proposal, and you look at what Paul Ryan's proposed. The president's budget doubles and then triples the debt. Paul Ryan's proposal not only balances the budget, but does end up paying off the debt. So, yes, there's a huge contrast.
And when the vote comes, I believe, in the House of Representatives tomorrow on the continuing resolution, are you going to be in favor of that?
On the continuing resolution, I will probably vote no. I voted no on the other one, and I will vote no on this one, because I don't think it's making as many cuts to our spending as I'd like to see it done. I signed on to the Pledge for America and, you know, said that we were going to try to achieve $100 billion in cuts. This falls short of that.
Well, Congressman, we know you're in a rush, and we appreciate your time to talk to us by cell phone.
Oh, thank you.
Congressman Jason Chaffetz, a representative from Utah. He represents the 3rd District there, a Republican. And joining us now is Congressman Emanuel Cleaver, Democrat from Missouri, chair of the Congressional Black Caucus. And good of you to be with us.
Good to be here.
And I know you have to rush off because there's a vote, I think, on the floor. But just a quick reaction to the president's remarks.
Well, frankly, I thought the president reconnected himself with the Democratic base and at the same time reached out to independents. He talked about some components that his debt commission had proposed that he embraces, and I think that he was successful in walking between the raindrops in terms of touching on issues that he realizes are points of tremendous concern with the Democratic caucus. For example, when he said, "Not in my watch." He completely received my attention and attaboys, because he is saying Medicare and Medicaid are not going to be destroyed under his watch, and that's frankly one of the big concerns that I have personally. It's important for the listeners, however, to keep in mind that the president will not have a budget up before us, and I think there may be some confusion out there. The budget that we are voting on will be the Republican budget and not the president's budget. What he is saying is, I think, giving guidance to the negotiations that will take place as well as when the bill comes to his desk, he's saying that there are some things he simply will not sign off on, and I'm thankful for it.
Well, again, there's obviously a vote that's coming in the House shortly, and that's about the current year budget, and there's a deal reached last week. The president will sign that when it comes to his desk. This is about the next year's budget. In a sense, though, Congressman, isn't it about the next election?
For some, it is. I would hope that the majority of the members of the Congress can vote on the next generation and not the next election, and that is that we're going to try to remove from consideration any of the red meat social issues from our budget. But keep in mind, what we're about to vote on in just a few minutes is a reinsertion in this whole discussion of Planned Parenthood. We're getting ready to vote on the Rules Committee, or what we call the Rules, and that essentially is now laying out another vote on Planned Parenthood.
To defund it, yeah.
So that's right. So that means I can't vote for it.
I see. So you're not going to be able to support the continuing resolution if it includes that measure.
Absolutely. And I doubt seriously if there will be very many Democratic votes. So,
and if a lot of Republicans like Jason Chaffetz don't support it, too, it could be an interesting vote.
It will be interesting and tragic, but I think there are at some point we have to draw the line in the sand. I think the president did it. And I think you're going to find when you look at the vote today that the caucus is doing it as well.
Congressman Cleaver, we know you've got to go cast your vote on that measure. We appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Emmanuel Cleaver, a Democrat from Missouri and chair of the Congressional Black Caucus, with us by phone from his office on Capitol Hill. And, well, we apologize to Maya McGinnis, the president of the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget at the New America Foundation. She's been waiting patiently, and you did get an endorsement there from Congressman Chaffetz.
I did, and I'm happy to be with you.
And can you tell us, first of all, as you listened to the speech, did the president engage the debate with Congressman Ryan as his proposal came out a couple of weeks ago, or we now know what we're going to be talking about for the next year and a half or so?
Yeah, he did. I mean, I think the president did a really good job, and he did get engaged, and it's something that, frankly, he's been a little bit missing in action for the past couple months. His own fiscal commission came out with a plan about 4 months ago, and he's done very little to push it forward. And presidential leadership is going to be key here. And I think he stepped in and did just the right thing today. I think he did a really good job. Let me put out a couple reservations.
Sure.
One, I think he lays out a plan that's short on the level of savings we're going to need to have. So he talks about saving $4 trillion over 12 years. That's less than his own fiscal commission recommended. And that's probably the least we need to do, what the fiscal commission recommended, saving about that much over a decade. So we're going to have to do more. Second, he's short on specifics. If you look at what Congressman Ryan did, he put out a huge, bold plan, very detailed, and very courageous, because it's hard. You can see he's going to get beaten up for it. The president wasn't as courageous in what he laid out there because he didn't get specific. But what he did do is put out something that's doable. I think what he's talking about is a really helpful starting point for moving this discussion forward.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, I think that entitlement reform is going to have to be a key here, and we're going to have to get very serious about what structural reforms we make to our health care programs, and Social Security is going to have to be fixed for its own sake as well. So we're going to have to move into tough territory for both parties, getting specific there. But overall, I think he really did what was needed. He is now engaged. It's a bit overdue, but it's terrific to have him. And also what he did is he set the table. For the discussion to unfold. So he set the table by inviting members of both parties to come and start holding these discussions. We need to move quickly here. The debt ceiling is basically nipping at our heels. That is a vote that we have to handle responsibly. Credit markets around the world are actually watching how we're going to handle this. And ideally, you were mentioning this is a big issue for the upcoming election. We really should be shooting for getting this deal done this year, not waiting till the election, because it's so important that we put an overall multi-year plan in place to deal with our deficits and debt before credit markets force us to. So I think the discussion has started in earnest here, and I'm very pleased that he made the speech he did today.
It's interesting, in as Mara Liasson mentioned earlier, a preview of the reaction or a pre-reaction, Congressman, the Speaker of the House, Congressman Boehner, praised the president for taking a serious approach. But at that same news conference, Republican leadership said tax increases are a non-starter. If they take that position, it's going to be difficult to arrive at a consensus between Congressman Ryan's plan and the president's.
It is going to be difficult. There is a really helpful model for this, I think, which is actually looking at tax reform, the way the Bowles-Simpson Fiscal Commission laid it out, which is saying there's well over $1 trillion in spending programs we run through the tax cut every year, exemptions, deductions, credits. The president talked a bit about those. If we were to aggressively get rid of all of those tax breaks, we could actually dramatically lower rates in a way that would raise revenue to help close the deficit. That is a pretty promising approach to all this. We will still fight to the end, I'm sure, about taxes. But I'll actually tell you the sleeper issue that's going to have a lot more fighting over it is health care, because Congressman Ryan has laid out a detailed and dramatic structural reform to our health care systems. And the president has his own health care bill that we just passed, which does put in place some measures to control costs, but not nearly enough, as I think is being acknowledged now. And so we're going to have to think about how structurally to get health care costs under control. The president lays out a goal for that, a very aggressive goal of how we would keep costs not growing so much, but not specifics to fill it in. And so while people are going to focus on the fight over taxes, and that will be real, the discussion about how to reform health care and where to go from here is also going to be a big part of all of this. And it really is one of the keys to controlling the deficit, because health care costs are the biggest problem we face.
And as you look at the process, one of the curious responses you have from the public as they've focused on these dramatic days in the past couple of weeks as we approached a government shutdown, and as all of this discussion about the long-term deficit and the debt have surged to the surface, is people are pretty, I'm not sure that nauseated is too strong a word.
Well, I guess the dress rehearsal is always supposed to go badly, right? What we've just watched has been just a terrible, terrible view of politics. The problems we face, and I think the president did a good job of stating this too, are very serious. And this is not something that we should be looking at partisan points over. This is something that if we don't make changes to our deficit and debt situation in advance of when credit markets force us to, we will all lose, no matter what your political point of view. If you don't want new taxes, we hit a fiscal crisis, we will have new taxes on top of old taxes. If you don't want to deal with reforming entitlements and a fiscal crisis hits, we will end up shredding the safety net when we don't have to. So the point is, the way to keep the economy strong is to make these changes as quickly as possible. Everybody's going to have to give something here. There's no way that everybody's going to get their perfect plan. Compromise is going to be key here, and that means the discussions need to start as quickly as possible, and we basically have to put out there that this is about doing what's in the best interest of the country, and that's putting in a credible, serious plan that will get us to stable debt levels over the coming decade as quickly as possible. It will be nobody's perfect plan, but we really have to get one done. And so I think we're on our way to starting that discussion in earnest, and I think that's great. It needs to happen.
Maya McGinnis is with us from our member station, KERA in Dallas, president of the Committee for Responsible Budget. You're listening to special coverage from NPR News. And you say we should do this without scoring partisan points. That's difficult in a Washington, D.C. that is so bitterly divided and which already sees itself in an election year. The next issue that comes up is the debt ceiling. And everybody says this is an issue that has to be dealt with responsibly. Everyone's definition of responsible, though, is different. The president says just extend it. And the Democrats say just extend it. The Republicans say we're not going to extend it unless we can extract serious budget cuts in along with it.
That's exactly right. We are set up for that political fight, I'm afraid. But it is such a serious issue. So the debt ceiling, we have to increase it. This is not, it sounds like a fiscally irresponsible thing to do, but these are commitments we've already made. And if we don't increase it, it means not paying the interest payments on our debt obligations. That causes a crisis through markets around the world. That puts us in a recession. That is not the scenario anybody wants to have. But on the other side of that argument, people, or the White House has been saying, we want a clean increase, nothing attached to it. Listen, if we stay on the fiscal path that we are on currently, we will end up with a crisis anyhow. It's just going to take a longer time to get there. So it actually can be used as an opportunity. We need to increase that debt ceiling, and we need to do it quickly as possible. We shouldn't even, there are all sorts of kind of trust fund juggling mechanisms the Secretary of the Treasury can do if he's forced to. We shouldn't even let it get that far. We should have had a plan ready for this weeks ago. But we should put a plan in place as quickly as possible. But there should be responsible things attached to that debt ceiling increase to help us move towards an overall total plan. If we don't have time or aren't able to put a full plan in place, we need to put the beginnings of a plan. And I think one of the really interesting things that came out of the president's speech today was talking about fail-safes, mechanisms that you put in the budget that you make sure if budgetary savings aren't found as promised, automatic savings and changes to the budget will happen. That pushes members of Congress to make changes, and it makes sure that the ones that they put in place stay on track. So that's something that we, through a commission called the Peterson-Pugh Commission, have focused extensively on. And I think it's going to be a very helpful tool to keep us moving forward to get this budget deal in place. And it could be a big part of that debt ceiling increase.
It's a fiscal doomsday device. So it's, it forces
people.
We'd
like to avoid that.
Yes,
yeah.
Indeed. But as we look ahead, if you could characterize Congressman Ryan's proposal as a maximalist position from the Republican side, something Democrats were not going to be able to swallow, but something the majority of Republicans were probably going to be able to endorse. Could you look at President Obama's proposal today as the same thing from the Democratic side?
Actually, I see them. I don't exactly. I see Congressman Ryan's as a sort of visionary proposal for the kinds of changes we need to be talking about to health care over the longer term. We need to make structural changes to healthcare. Our Medicare and Medicaid programs face big, big problems, and just small little changes around the edges isn't going to fix them. We have a real healthcare cost growth problem in this country. And I think he's kind of on the leading edge of talking about how we're going to restructure entitlements so that they're not always growing and pushing out other parts of the budget. And so I think he's teed up a discussion that we'll be having for years to come. I think what the president did is he basically took his own fiscal commission's plan and kind of watered it down. So it's the fiscal commission light, perhaps. And I don't think it's enough to get us there. But I think it's closer to the kind of compromise that we could see this year. So I think what the president has done is started the discussion for how we can compromise to get something done quickly. And what Congressman Ryan has done is put out a larger vision for where we go beyond that. And the timing of all of this is going to be tough because we have to get something in place now. But in terms of health care reform, it's probably not going to be completed this year. We're going to have to keep going back and making changes to those programs to make sure they stay on track. So I think they've both contributed in very, very different ways. But I think that they have both helped move the discussion forward.
And we just have a few seconds left. You said there is an urgency to get a deal done on the 2012 budget in the next couple of months. Do you actually foresee a political reality for that?
I'm more hopeful than I have been before because the country, I've just been traveling around the country a little bit, and voters are terrific on this. I keep having people coming up and saying, you know, if I believed we could fix this problem, I'd sacrifice some of my Social Security. I'd let my revenues, my taxes go up a little bit. They want to see this get done. For the strength of the country, we have to get this done. And we now have both political parties engaged. So I'm keeping my fingers crossed. We really need to make this work.
Maya McGinnis, thank you for your analysis, and thank you again for your patience.
Thank you.
Maya McGinnis at member station KERA in Dallas, president of the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget at the New America Foundation. More coverage of this later today on NPR News. Stay tuned for that. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. You've been listening to special coverage from NPR News.